हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरिगौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Page 50. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna Book. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita 9.29, the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, is equal to everyone. He has no friends and no enemies, but he is inclined to a devotee who renders him service with devotional service, devotional love. The Bhagavad Gita also declares that the Supreme Lord is responsive in proportion to the devotional service rendered by the devotee. Akura thought that Krishna was like the desire tree in the heavenly planets, which gives fruit according to the desire of the worshipper. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is also the source of everything. Devotee must know how to render service unto him, and thus be recognized by him. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it is therefore explained that one should serve both the spiritual master and Krishna simultaneously, and in that way make progress in Krishna consciousness. Service rendered to Krishna under the direction of the spiritual master is bona fide service, because the spiritual master is the manifested representative of Krishna. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that when one satisfies the spiritual master, he satisfies the Supreme Lord. Yeah, so Krishna is dealing equally with everyone. Means that how you deal, how you interact, everything like that, that's how he's going to deal with you. So you deal with him as money, then he'll respond as money. You deal with him as power, he responds in that way. You deal with him as a person, he'll respond as a person. So like that, then the process works. So of that, then dealing with him as a person in devotion, with affection, then that's what he, he's inclined towards. Because that's how he deals with the living entity. Because why is he sitting in the heart and making all these arrangements, right? It's for the, because of affection for the living entity. But unless the living entity responds in affection, then you have the difficulty is that he can't respond in that way. So, means he can. Being equal, he's going to deal with you as you approach him. So, yes. Now, he being the source of everything, then everything coming from him, then everything will work very nicely because he doesn't have to depend on anyone or anything else to fulfill the desires of the living entity. So he's not restricted in any way. He's who's free. The living entity is the one who's limited by how he can approach. Right? Like that. And so then here, then Prabhupada's pointing out is then by approaching through the spiritual master, then by the grace of Krishna one gets Guru, by the grace of Guru one gets Krishna. So that combination, that's what makes everything work. We don't use that combination, then it's not going to work out very good. We try to worship Krishna without Guru, you see, like the ordinary devotees, they may do that, you know, in the Hindu community and like that. They all worship Krishna nice, but they don't necessarily have a guru. They're not following like that. Otherwise, you know, generic, this one said this, that one said that, you know. Then, those who just focus on just the guru and don't remember that it's about pleasing Krishna, that the guru is teaching us how to please Krishna. So that combination where we understand by the grace of Krishna one's gotten guru, then by following the orders of guru, then doing that to please Krishna, that's then how one's going to attain Krishna. So, yeah. Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates. Akura expresses his desire for the mercy of Balaram, who is clearly his relative, the son of Vasudeva, for Akura thinks of Krishna as the son of Nanda. It would be impossible for him to get Krishna's mercy, since he is most attached to the cowherds and gopis. Va instead of cha indicates that Krishna's mercy is most difficult to obtain. It says Balaram is elder. Agajaha. He gives mercy. If he gives mercy, then Krishna will follow his example as a younger brother. Right, so he's saying Balaram, he's coming from the Kshatriya line like that. But Krishna, he sees that he's just Nanda Baba's son. He knows that he's Vasudeva, but his mood is there. So it's more as he's seeing, because he's the son of Rohini. And so he's not identified as directly as Nanda Baba's son. But because Nanda Baba's taking care, then he becomes his son. Right? Because someone who gives birth, someone who protects, and someone who feeds, any of these three are considered father. Right? So then Nanda Baba then is, by understanding, they think that he is the father, he is protecting, and he's feeding. But with Balaram, then he's not the father, but he's protecting and he's feeding. So then this way, then he's the father. So they're seen as brothers, and then like this.
Who is Balaram's father then?
Vasudev. Because he's born from Rohini. Right, so it's known he's born from Rohini, and Rohini's married to Vasudev. Okay. He's another one of his wives. Yes?
We know that the Balaram is the original guru.
Hmm.
But then Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami, he explains further in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Mahaprabhu, he represents Diksha Guru, and then Nityananda Prabhu, he represents Shiksha Guru.
So it's not the other way around?
No. That's how
okay.
I remember that.
Okay, okay.
In Mahaprabhu Diksha, Nityananda Shiksha. So then how can we connect Balaram with, because everybody knows he's the guru, but what kind of guru is he?
The basic principle is, by the grace of Nityananda Prabhu, then one can be freed from all material interest. Right? But to give up that interest, then you have to give up the identity that I am the controller and enjoyer. So by the grace of Advaitacharya Prabhu, then you can give up that false ego. Right? Because he's how you say? Yeah. Means he has the aspect Sada Shiva, and he's the lord of the material creation. So then by giving that up, then you can get the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, in which you give up material desire. Then you can get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So that'll be your connection. Does that make sense? Because Krishna is the original guru. Right? And then representing him, you have Radharani and you have
Balaram.
Right? But Lord Chaitanya is Krishna taking the mood of Radharani, so then he has both the original guru aspect and that Siksha guru aspect coming from Radharani. So then that leaves Balaram as just in that position of Siksha. So then that means our diksha is in that line of Radha and Krishna. Does that make sense? That line, worshippers of Radha and Krishna, as opposed to, Krishna and the cowherd boys, or, other lines that may be there. So for us, he would be a Siksha guru, but let's say for the cowherd boy lines, he'd be more, probably more representing the Diksha Guru. Yeah. Does that make sense there? You can also look at it from another angle, is that he would representing Sankarsana, then he would be in the position of the Diksha. And then Lord Chaitanya, then representing the other two, then that would be the Siksha. But if Krishna's Kaviraj Goswami has put it in this way, then it means that our line is here and he's the Siksha Guru for that. So the main point is that by the grace of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, you can get the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. So then by getting his mercy, by following his instructions, like he's always preaching, he's always, he and Haridas Thakur, like you could say, the main personalities pushing on the Sankirtan mission. Lord Chaitanya is there, but they're the ones that are actively organizing it, like that. So then by taking part in that aspect, that will then please Lord Chaitanya. And so then that will then bring you to get his mercy. Right? Which is a good thing because he's very merciful. Is that... Yeah. So we see here Balaram's more prominent in Mayapur. And so that's why then Krishna is easier to approach through Mayapur. While in Vrindavan, he's not as prominent a role. And so then things are more strict there. But by the mercy of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, then things are more accommodating here. Sukadev Goswami continued. Yes, so here he's pointing out that by because Balaram then is has that closer connection he feels, then and then he'll be able to get Krishna's mercy by getting Balaram's mercy. Because Krishna's mercy is harder to get. So he feels that by getting Balaram's mercy, him being the older brother, his younger brother will follow that. So we see that same, that Mathura flavor, that they can combine both the Aishwarya and the sweetness of Vrindavan and not have a problem with that. They don't have any difficulty. Sukadev goes, so he's looking at it from tattva, then Krishna's higher, but then from rasa, then Krishna will follow Balaram. So Krishna being higher, Balaram's easier to approach, right? But at the same time, because of rasa, Krishna will then follow Balaram. So they have this interesting combination of applying both at once. Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear king, while the son of Swapalka..." Oh, we did check in that the Satvatas are one of the groups of the lines of the Yadus. But at the same time, as like Prabhu said, the Satvatas are also known as just any devotees, the Vaishnavas. Sukadev Goswami continued, "My dear king, while the son of Swapalka, traveling on the road, was meditating deeply on Sri Krishna, he reached Gokula as the sun was beginning to set. In the cowherd pasture, Akura saw the footprints of those feet, whose pure dust the rulers of all the planets in the universe hold on their crowns. Those footprints of the Lord, distinguished by such marks as the lotus, barleycorn, and elephant goad, made the ground wonderfully beautiful. Increasingly agitated by ecstasy at seeing the Lord's footprints, his bodily hair standing on end because of his pure love and his eyes filled with tears, Akura jumped down from his chariot and began rolling about among those footprints, exclaiming, 'Ah, this is the dust from my master's feet.' The very goal of life for all embodied beings is this ecstasy, which Akura experienced then. Upon receiving Kamsa's order, he put aside all pride, fear, and lamentation, and absorbed himself in seeing, hearing, and describing the things that reminded him of Lord Krishna."
Can we say that Akura is also an internal associate of Krishna?
That I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he's one of the eternal associates or if he's one of those coming up and becoming perfect. But by his actions that we see here, it seems to be he is an associate. Like that. Because the other ones seem to not necessarily have it all together themselves, and then by the association they get it, come to that point. But that I can't say. We know the Pandavas are. You know, and a few of them, like Satyaki and a few others, that they're all, you know, Prajumna and Aniruddha and all these. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Yeah, you don't have the Dwarka. Oh, you might have. Isn't there one where it shows who's who, from Braj Leela, who's where they are in the Dwarka Leela? Or it's just mentioned. It's only between Gaur Leela and Krishna Leela. Gaur
Leela and Krishna Leela.
Yeah, okay. It's just sometimes it mentions who they are in Dwarka Leela. Akura's journey to Vrindavan is exemplary. One who intends to visit Vrindavana should follow the ideal footsteps of Akura and always think of the pastimes and activities of the Lord. As soon as one reaches the boundary of Vrindavan, he should immediately smear the dust of Vrindavan over his body without thinking of his material position and prestige. Right, so one's not thinking of all these things and all that. You know, in other words, one doesn't say, hey, this is a new suit. You know, you want me rolling on the ground? You know, you don't say that stuff. Like that. Śrīla Nārottama Dasa Thakura is sung in a celebrated song, Viṣaya Charya Kave Shuddha Have Man. When my mind will be purified after leaving the contamination of material sense enjoyment, I shall be able to visit Vrindavan. Actually, one cannot go to Vrindavan by purchasing a ticket. The process of going to Vrindavan is shown by Akura. Right? So by meditating on Krishna, being absorbed in Krishna, that's how you go to Vrindavan. You can't buy a ticket, right? So that's the whole point. If you want to actually see Vrindavan as it is, then one has to have this mood of Akura, where that in that humility, then being surrendered to Krishna, absorbed in Krishna, that way then one can actually enter Vrindavan. Śrī Viśvanātha Cakravarti Thakura elaborates. After describing the actions of Akura's body, words, and mind, from his starting the journey in Mathura until his entrance in Braja, the conclusion is given in this verse. As Akura gave up all false pride on seeing the footprints and rolled on the ground, the conclusion is, okay, so he's given up all false pride and he's, you know, rolling on the ground in ecstasy. This is the goal of human life. He gave up the pride, hitva dambham, such as, how can I, Akura, minister of the king, worship by the king, roll in the dust of a cowherd boy? He gave up fear of Kamsas being angry for rolling in the dust of Krishna, his enemy. He gave up lamentation, sucham, concerning destruction of his wife, children, and house by angry Kamsa. So we see is that the yogic Brahmins, they couldn't surrender. Even though they technically live in Vrindavan, they at the same time aren't. Because they're worried about all these things. Well, Akura, who is even closer to Kamsa, then he is not worried about this. So he actually is able to enter Vrindavan. Verses 28-43. Akura's reception in Vrindavan. Sugadeva Goswami continued. Akura then saw Krishna and Balaram in the village of Braja, going to milk the cows. Krishna wore yellow garments, Balaram blue, and their eyes resembled autumnal lotuses. One of those two mighty armed youths, the shelters of the goddess of fortune, had a dark blue complexion, and the others was white. With their fine-featured faces, they were the most beautiful of all persons, as they walked with the gait of young elephants, glancing about with compassionate smiles. Those two exalted personalities beautified the cow pasture with the impressions of their feet, which bore the marks of the flag, lightning bolt, elephant gold, and lotus. The two lords, whose pastimes are most magnanimous, are attractive and attractive, were ornamented with jeweled necklaces and flower garlands, anointed with auspicious fragrant substances, freshly bathed and dressed in spotless raiment. They were the primeval supreme personalities, the masters and original causes of the universe, who had, for the welfare of the earth, now descended in their distinct forms of Keshava and Balaram. O King Pariket, they resembled two gold-bedecked mountains, one of emerald and the other of silver. As with their effulgence, they dispel the sky's darkness in all directions. Srila Jiva Goswami writes, from far off he saw their dress. He saw them glance at him, since by their nature their glances of mercy were attractive to internal and external senses. Their eyes, like bunches of white kandali flowers, were brighter than lightning. They were also red at the edges. That manifests in the Kishore age. Right? So this flavor that they have, then it comes at this time, right? So before that, then we'll have a different flavor. But the reddish, I guess, on the corners of the eyes and that manifests in the Kishore age. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, now after seeing their footprints marked with flag, trident, thunderbolt, and lotus, Akura actually saw Krishna and Balaram face to face. Although they were the most influential personalities, they were glancing at him with smiling faces. Sukadeva Goswami continued. Right? Akura, overwhelmed with affection, right? So he saw them in this form. Because before, when they come back, you see the gopis are talking about when they come back from the fields and they have that dust from the cows and their hair and all that, that he looks like he's fatigued, but at the same time he's being very pleasant and smiling at everybody and all that. So that's that we see that is more strongly their meditation. Now having come back, now they've been bathed very nicely, dressed in new clothes and ornaments and everything, you know, for sitting at the house. No. Means there's still people walking in the same group, but you only hear that one guy. Oh boy. And so then he's dressed very nicely, and then he comes and he sees him in that form, right? Because that one more, you know, more is what he will be accustomed to seeing. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Akura, overwhelmed with affection, quickly jumped down from his chariot and fell at the feet of Krishna and Balaram like a rod. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates, when Akura came near, he jumped down from the chariot and, walking a few steps forward, fell down close to the feet of Krishna and Balaram. Because he is bewildered by intense prema in Dasya Bhav, Sneha Vihvalaha. The meaning is this. When Akura first saw Krishna, he did not jump off his chariot because of the bewilderment of his prema. By that bewilderment, he was not aware whether he was on the chariot or on the ground. And with mind and eyes attracted to that form, he attained a more favorable view as the chariot, pulled by the horses, moved quickly towards the Lord. As he got closer, the same bewilderment of prema was the cause of his jumping from the chariot. When he saw he was far away, he did not realize he was in a higher position in the chariot. When he got close, he realized this. Recovering awareness, he developed respect, and thus jumped from the chariot. Though it was not proper from him to offer respects on the ground since he was a senior, he did so because of the bewilderment of prema. Right? So from the aspect of the Aishwarya is there, then he would be offering his respect. But as far as the relationship goes, then he wouldn't be offering respect. So you see that all these different flavors are all coming in the dealings as he's moving forward. He's just seeing and he's just looking at them, so he's not thinking about at all obeisances. When he gets closer and he can see them better, then he starts to understand the position that he's in the chariot and all this and that. Then he gets off the chariot and then offers his obeisances. But all this is happening under the bewilderment of prema. Sukadeva Goswami continued, the joy of seeing the Supreme Lord flooded Akura's eyes with tears and decorated his limbs with eruptions of ecstasy. He felt such eagerness that he could not speak to present himself. O King, okay. Footnote 14. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur assigns verses 34 to 35. To Bhaga Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 19, the perfection of the mellow, pure love, the unlimited dimensions of rasa, siddha prema rasa, rasa garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakur's book. So all the variety of emotions that are felt by him and then what he does in those various feelings of emotion, then that's all being explained. Recognizing Akrura, Lord Krishna drew him close with his hand, which bears the sign of the chariot wheel, and then embraced him. Krishna felt pleased, for he is always benignly disposed towards his surrendered devotees. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Akrura saw the signs of the Lord on his hands. By the touch of his hand, he felt the greatest fortune. Parasara says, Krishna touched Akrura with his hand marked with a flag, thunderbolt, and lotus, pulled him towards him, and deeply embraced him with affection. With affection he embraced him, rather than greeting an elderly properly with obeisances. He disregarded treating him as an elder because he is affectionate to those who have surrendered. He was controlled by Akrura's intense bhakti in Dasya Ras. Gita says, Ye yutamam prapadyante. According as they surrender, I respond. Bhagavad Gita 4.11. This was the cause of Krishna's first embracing him. Sridhar Swami says that Krishna touched Akrura with his hand, showing the mark of the flag, thunderbolt, and lotus, as if to inform him of his capacity to kill Kamsa. He says, as if, because this is not the actual reason. The reason was his affection for his devotee, right? So these other things, that chastising the demons, correcting all things that are wrong, that Krishna is going to do, but that's not the actual reason he does them. He only does that because of the benefit the devotees will get. Right? It means if there were no devotees and people are not following the Vedic culture, then they'll just get harassed by the material energy. He won't come himself, correct everything, inspire them all so that they'll follow the rules and regulations to continue in their materialism. Right? So it's only because of the devotees and their affection for him, therefore then he comes. Right? Because the non-devotees then hearing about Krishna's interaction with the devotees, then they become attracted, then that's very nice, then they get the benefit. But he doesn't come for the benefit of the materialists, he comes for the benefit of the devotees. So, right? Because the materialists are already being benefited by him reciprocating with them as the material energy, and whatever is their interest, then that's what they receive. Sukadeva Goswami continued, as Akrura stood with his head bowed, Lord Sankarsana, Balaram, grasped his joined hands, and then Balaram took him to his house in the company of Lord Krishna. After inquiring from Akrura whether his trip had been comfortable, Balaram offered him a first-class seat, bathed his feet in accordance with the injunctions of scripture, and specifically served him milk with honey. Yes. Yeah, the Acharyas mention that it's Argya. Prabhupada mentions in that. It's just that because milk and honey, yogurt, these are mixed. That's what is an Argya, darba grass and other things like that. So it's an Argya because he's a senior. Because otherwise it's not a standard opening of milk and honey. I mean, okay. Okay, sorry. Okay. But I think that's the main meal in the other.
Yeah. There's just the promise.
Yeah. No, but here he actually got it. It wasn't just promised. He actually got it. And the fun part is he didn't have to fight over it with others.
Oh, man.
Okay. The Almighty Lord Balaram presented Akrura with the gift of a cow, massaged his feet to relieve him of fatigue, and then with great respect and faith fed him suitably prepared food of various fine tastes. Right, so they gave him a seat, you know, asanam, then they bathe his feet, they do the argya, they give a cow in charity, then after that he goes and bathes, you know, changes his clothes, everything, then they have dinner. You know, so you can see is that the position of these 16 items is just standard interaction. Does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So that's just how it's done. So depending upon the situation, who it is, and how much is there, how much is like this. But this is the standard point. So it's Vrindavan. They still act in this way, because this is culture. When Akura had eaten to his satisfaction, Lord Balaram, the supreme knower of religious duties, offered him aromatic herbs so sweetening his mouth, along with fragrances and flower garlands. Right, so the chandan or ganda, it means is you offer sandalwood paste. And so because sandalwood paste is called gandha, so we'll just tend to take it as scents. But in the tradition is that it's various kinds of, it means sandalwood paste itself is fragrant, but generally you add other things to it to bring out more fragrance and the variety of fragrance. So then that's so when you say ate ganda pushpe, the gandha means sandalwood paste and flowers, right? And then that sandalwood, then you can either have it plain or with so many other things. So when he says, along with fragrances and flower garlands, means his ganda and pushpa. So, thus Akura once again enjoyed the highest pleasure. Right? So just that he's thinking about him all day, then he's so happy he sees Krishna's footprints, then that he is in great ecstasy. Then when he sees them, he's in great ecstasy. Then seeing how they deal with him, because that was part of his meditation, that when he gets here, they'll deal in all these ways. Why? Because Krishna and Balaram, being the, has, what was the word given? The supreme knower of religious duties, right? They establish, that means their order, their desire becomes the order. Their order then being performed is religious duties. So this is just how they like to do things. So naturally then he's thinking that they will do these things. He's not thinking about himself. Yes, I'm going to be worshipped by the Supreme Lord. He's thinking just how nicely Krishna will go through all these things. How he'll do all these, how he'll set the perfect example. And that just makes him more his you know, worshipable on that way, and his affection for him greater. So.
Shodashupshad has been given to the Lord, and because the devotees, they represent Krishna, mm-hmm. therefore the same applies to them also.
Yes. Yes. So Akura is a devotee, therefore. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, the Vedic system of receiving a guest was completely observed by Lord Krishna himself to teach all others how to receive a guest at home. Right? So what Krishna does, he's also doing that to set the example. It is a Vedic injunction that even if a guest is an enemy, he should be received so well that he does not apprehend any danger from the host. Right? Because that may, even if they're enemies, that may solve the problem and they're no longer enemies, since being enemies is not actually the purpose of spiritual life. Right? So therefore, giving that up. So by dealing properly, then someone may give up that inimical aspect. Or they'll be more considerate. Right? They may not like you, but they may stop harassing you. You know? Or they may not, but whatever. Depends upon which millennia we're functioning in here. If the host is a poor man, he should at least offer a straw mat as a sitting place and a glass of water to drink. Right, so that's the minimum. So we see his minimum is a place to sit and some water to drink. And then it goes up to then how Krishna and Balaram are receiving Akura. So then anything in between, depending on who you're dealing with, what facility you have, like that. Krishna and Balaram welcome Akura in a way just befitting his exalted position. So according to his position, then they did it in that degree. Srila Jiva Goswami elaborates. Balaram was the knower of Vaishnav Dharma, how to treat devotees. He knew how to welcome the devotees. It was the Dvadasi, time for breaking the fast, and especially Vaishnavas should be properly respected at that time. Balaram acted to teach the common people. He made Akura pleased.
Dvadashi, we break the fast in the morning in the Paranasam. He is reached in the evening.
And so? Sorry. See, if you're doing means this makes sense in the context of if you're doing the if you're doing the full Monty of how you say Ekadasi Vratas. Does that make sense? I think he was General Montgomery or Montgomery. Then he used to have these training sessions when he would run them himself. They were very, very intense. You know, the amount of running and whatever else they had to do. So when he was going to be there, then they would refer to that session that he's going to run as that's going to be a full training session. So it was a full Monty. Right? Does that make sense? Okay. So here, then, when we're dealing with the Ekadasi in this respect, then from the day before, on the Dasami, you eat lunch, you eat your lunch nicely and all that, but after that you don't eat again. You drink water, you do all those things like that. You know, you take rest on time and everything like that, because then when you get up in the morning, then you're not going to eat anything, right? If it's a regular codicil, you'll drink water, but if it's not, if it's a near jal, you won't drink water, right? So then that would go through the whole day. They'll stay up all night being awake, right? Then the next morning, then you break the fast either with, you know, just the water or water and some grain. But that doesn't mean you know. Yes.
You break.
Yeah, you just break the fast. Then there'll be something either at noon, but in this case, as he's referring here, is you can't see the other point on the Dwadasi, part of the Dwadasi Vrata in this whole part, is you can't sleep until the sun goes down. Now, if you eat a big meal at noontime or in the morning, what's going to happen? If you've been up all night. So therefore, then in that case, the big meal would be in the evening. So you have very small in the morning, like just a grain or something to break, then have something light noon, and then the full in the evening. That way, then, and then after that, you could take rest and... Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. So in the context of that full consideration, then we can see why they would mention it in this way. Mm-hmm. You know? Does that make sense? For us, we've already eaten all the maha left from the day before as soon as Mangalartik is over. You know, and that's if we weren't the ones sneaking off before that, and that we actually went after Mangalartik and got some. But the others left halfway through and ate most of it, at least all the good stuff. Does that make sense?
Are there still people who are following that?
Are there still people who are following that? The part of not eating and staying up all night... That devotees were doing, but the Dasami and the Dwadasi, not really. I think Bhakti Trumars would follow the first half of the day on the Dwadasi, but taking lead from the Brajbasis. But they would break the fast with a drinking a huge amount. It's like liters and liters of water and milk mixed together, like half-half. So one, you could drink a lot, and it would, you know, rehydrate the body. But the thing about milk when it's taken in a great amount is that milk in general will remove impurities from the body. Because when you fast, then all the impurities go into the digestive system. And so then having all that in the system, then they'll drink a huge amount of this water and milk, you know, like 2-3 liters worth, like that kind of thing. And then it will collect all the poisons that are there in the system, and it will all be removed from the system. So that's why you don't want to get involved in too many other things before lunch. Right? Then he'll have a regular lunch like that. But whether they would follow the no sleeping or this or that, that I don't know. Just like, does that make sense? Like that. But it actually starts from the day before. So basically you could say it's a 48-hour or even more, you know. That makes sense, yeah.
Maharaj, like you mentioned about the starting from Dwadashi, you know, it begins. And for Nirjala Ekadashi, especially, you know, devotees mentioned that we should get up at midnight, 11:30,
get up at midnight, 11:30.
It's in the month of usually May, June, you know, when mangoes are available. And we should drink lots of mango juice and mango milkshake.
Lots of mango juice and mango
milkshake.
So
that
we have
that much strength, you know, to perform the Nirjala Ekadashi. That is their...
Okay. And so then you're supposed to finish all this before the loudspeakers all go on and they start going, Allahu Akbar? Because that's exactly what they do.
This is
so, just go ahead, knock me out. Name me one traditional Brahmin smarta family that does a nirjal fast by getting up at midnight the day before and
doing
that.
Not smartas, our devotees, you know.
But I'm talking about, they didn't get this from the Brahmins, they got this from the Muslims. That's my point.
Yeah.
Why would we get up at midnight and eat? Why not eat before you go to bed?
Because 12 o'clock the new day begins, so you know, if they stop...
The new day begins for what? So why do you have to eat at midnight? What's wrong with eating? They normally eat at 9 o'clock or something.
They eat that time also.
What has it got to do with anything? Why does it say, Hari Bhakti Vilas says, that you're only supposed to eat lunch and not eat a dinner before a big fast? Because when you eat more at the closer time like that, then when the sun comes up in the morning, suddenly you have this intense hunger in your stomach that then you got to live with for many hours before it finally goes away. So, by eating the big lunch, you know, full lunch, not kill yourself lunch, then, and drinking, you know, water and stuff like that, or in the evening can be something very light, but it's not a meal as such, then you're going to not feel hungry the next day because the body would have already adjusted. So therefore, the day goes very nicely. It's not the volume of what food you eat, it's whether you feel hungry or not. Right? So their idea, if I eat more, I'll feel less hungry. But because the stomach's working, then it's working to try to digest everything that they ate at midnight that they shouldn't have eaten at midnight. And then, suddenly when it digests that, it's still working. And then what do you have? Intense hunger. So to avoid that, the stomach's already digested, you've gone to sleep, and so the stomach is just, you know, is resting. So then when you get up in the morning, you won't feel hunger. That's the system. This getting up at midnight, that's something they learned from their friends without mustaches, but having beards.
Generally, that is the first 1-2 years.
Huh?
First 1-2 nirjalas, like, this is a big thing, that we get up at midnight.
Where does this come from? I've never heard of this before. No one does it here in Bengal. No one does it in Vrindavan. Like that. This is the first time I've heard it. It's only over in that western side of India that I've heard of this. But what has it got to do with that? And they're saying that, but that's for a civil day. A civil day starts at midnight. You know what I'm saying? The lunar day or the solar day, well, you start it from the sunrise. You know what I'm saying? So when you get up in the Brahma Muhurta, that's when your vrata starts.
So you definitely can eat before that.
Not if you've gone to sleep, because they've gone to sleep, then they've gotten up. That's their.
No, if I were them, I would have gotten up earlier instead of midnight, like 2-3, and then eat.
No, but then you can't. Once you get up, then it starts the next day. The vrata starts from when you get up. So when they get up at midnight, that's when they start. Or they go back to bed after that?
Of course.
Yes. Put that alarm clock together.
Yes, that's true.
Wow, I'm the best.
That's what I said.
Yeah, it's just like trying to technically see how far you can cheat and so you don't feel that you're cheating. It's just like what is it? I don't understand the reality of this. And what does it have to do with mangoes? What do they do in winter? You know, there's no mangoes.
There's no
nirjala. There's no nirjala in winter.
Oh, I see. It's because they like that and because their senses aren't going to be functioning for so long and they're freaking out. So if they... do they break the fast with mangoes? Why don't they break the fast with mangoes if they like mangoes? See, because you eat so much mango at that time, you know, then what about all the heat? A nirjal, generally, I don't know why, happens to be the hottest day of the year. Somehow or another, it's always the hottest day. So then they're going to have a stomach full of that?
Because the logic is that heat beats the heat. You know?
Yes, again, from our brothers. You wear wool out in the desert. Okay. At least somebody likes the two tribes that got lost, right? You know, somebody does. This may be a local custom, but don't. If you ever try to propagate it around the world, there will be opposition. We'll make sure of it. You know, in other words, if this is something that a few people do because they think it's, they like doing it, but if you start saying that this is a standard, then we'll have to point out how it in no way, shape, or form is a standard. It's very neophyte kind of ways of dealing with vratas, that the whole mood of the vratas is about Krishna, it's about this, but here it's just all about their inconvenience at fasting. So better to not fast. Better to just get up in the morning, because they've slept properly at night, they've had proper, you know, they're not, their stomach's full and they've had a broken sleep. Get up, chant all their rounds very nicely. Better to get up early, chant some rounds, do all that. And then at times when they get hungry, then just eat mangoes all day. You know? I think they would get more spiritual benefit. You know what I'm saying? Because otherwise, why make up religion when we already have such a nice religion? No need. It's not part of the vrata. Sanatan Goswami doesn't mention it. So it's not not a recommendation. Does that make sense? Also, why are they using the civil days as the thing? Since when does midnight make the difference? It's sunrise that makes the difference. Right? So the Atiti is the combination between the solar day and the lunar day. It has nothing to do with the civil day. You know what I'm saying?
Essence from which such problems arise is that, you know, we have our culture, and this Prabhupada, Dr. ISKCON, you know, you have that culture. So, yeah, we have our things, and you should not, yeah, we're not Bengalis, we're parts of, from other parts of India. So, yeah, we come to ISKCON, we take initiation from there, but you know, we have a culture also. We
do well, that's all right, as yeah. long as they're only eating Alfonso mangoes. If they eat any other kind of mango, then I'll say it's bogus.
And there are two varieties of
alcohol. Yeah, which one?
One is bona fide, other is
not. Yeah, that's what you have to get. And where are the Alfonsos mostly from? From there, but more over, starting more to the west, you know, Pakistan and all that. That's where they all come from. So in case, again, what we're saying about.
What are the names?
Huh? Alfonso? You never heard of Alfonso?
It's the king of mangoes.
Yeah, it's considered one of the better mangoes. Like that. If it's a good one. If it's not a good one, then a lot of the other local ones here will be way better. But, you know, by the time it gets over here, it's not necessarily so good. So the ones that you buy there, or the ones you buy in London, or probably in Dubai, then those will be the good ones.
And there are 4 or 5 varieties.
4 or 5 varieties.
Which are very good.
Yes, yeah, so he can tell you the whole story.
Everybody has that.
See, the thing is we don't need to make up things and find loopholes like that. You know, so it's not like this is the, what do you call it? I don't know if it still happens, but it used to be before, is that there's a certain day of the year when they announce the new taxes. You know? In Delhi, they announce the new taxes. Mm-hmm. But the night before, there's a particular person who he would then already have worked out all the loopholes, and he publishes that, so that when the new taxes come out, then all the businessmen are already ready, and they know how to get through all the things like that. So we're not talking about that. Why we should look for loopholes? You know, it's just a matter of normal sadhana, normal everything. You go to bed, you sleep nicely, and everything like that. And so therefore then, you want to even then eat more, eat later. You know, instead of, they're going to get up anyway, let's say they go to bed at 10, okay? But now they're going to be up at that time and waste another hour and everything like that. So go to bed at 11 and eat a big meal at 10. So what's going to be the difference between that and the other? You know what I'm saying? You know, do something like that. They want to, okay, then do that. But keep it within the culture, because it's where do anyone in the Vedic culture gets up at midnight and eats? Because the next day is the fast day. Right? So therefore, I only know of one community who as a community does this. You know? Means that whenever is the time for what they're supposed to get up, they get up before that and then have this huge feast. Then the call for serving the Lord comes, they do all that, they go the whole day, and then as soon as the sun goes down or moon or whatever it is that's the authorities say is what's happening, then again they, you know, go for it. Right? So since when do we do that? You know? So, but at the same time, that they're worried about the fasting, they're going to fast, they're doing all that, that is a piety. And they're regulating their life in accordance with that. So from that angle, it's not that it's bad. It's a good thing. But at the same time, as we do have the traditions that you would follow, so that we would not have to make up our own interpretation, you know, to add in these kind of things like that. If there's some devotees that do that, then that's fine. But if they're saying, no, this is how you should do it, that's where the problem comes. You understand the difference? You know, so if they hold that, well, who cares? You know, like that. Yes?
It seems somewhat unusual that Krishna and Balaram do the whole welcome to Ahura, because it is expected that he's an elderly person. And then the more senior people in the community would do everything, but they do it themselves.
Oh, okay, from that angle. I guess from the angle that he's their family member. And so from that aspect, then they're doing.
Then it's from Matra side?
Yes. Means their connection with Vasudev, and then him being their uncle. So then I guess Swapalka must be, is he a brother of Vasudev, or a brother of Devaki, or something?
Right. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so there's some connection. So whether he's on the father's side or the mother's side, then from that aspect, then being their relative, then they would be interactive. But Nanda Baba, you see, he also will come and he'll discuss with him. But after all these arrangements are made, because the first thing, when notice up to now, they haven't asked him why he's come. They ask him if his journey was comfortable. Then they take care of him, you know, so he's relaxed and welcomed and that. Then he has his bath. Then he has his meal, like that. And so depending on what it is, then only after that they may discuss. But otherwise, officially, it would be... Does that make sense? So if they came earlier, then there's a lunch, then after the rest, then in the evening you discuss, then they came in the evening, then in the morning you discuss, you know, so unless it's an emergency, then it would work on that way. Son?
Maharaj, one more thing is, like, a grown-up son, actually, he's the one who's doing the practical service to the guest.
Oh, okay. So he's saying in the tradition, the eldest son, he takes care of does all these technical practical things for the guests, the practical stuff, like that. And so the father would be there and just like hosting. So then the guests will feel comfortable. So that way you're getting that respect, but it's also coming from someone who's junior and this and that. Because I've seen many times, it's like you're serving prasad, there's senior devotees there, and you're serving to make sure it all goes nicely, but they're uncomfortable because you're also senior devotee, so therefore they want you to sit with them. But then if you do that, the serving doesn't go well. Right? So therefore, if it's organized by those who are more junior, then no one's going to say anything. And then they all sit together and... Does that make sense? Yeah.
Things like massaging the feet and all. Small children massage, everybody's happy.
Okay.
Big people catch, it's like, oh, no.
Yeah. Yeah, that's also there. Does that make sense? Is that the younger ones, if they do the massaging the feet, then the guest won't feel uncomfortable. If someone older does it, then they might feel. So if they, you know, the younger ones do, then everyone's happy. Yeah. You don't catch the flavor?
No, I catch the flavor. It's just,
no,
you know, it's so different from the West. You give somebody.
Yeah. You just whack them on the back, and, you know. Or just as they walk in and you're on the couch and looking at the television, you just go, yeah, drinks are in the fridge, you know, like that. And like that, you know, you already have yours and those like that. And they get theirs, come and sit down, and then, hey, yeah, like that. And,
So what to do in these situations when we may try to welcome a guest like in some way as a Vedic custom, but the person is actually, because of their culture, and they're actually uncomfortable with all of this?
Then you just be respectful and whatever would be something that they would be comfortable with. Yeah? Yeah, I mean, other than a Budweiser. Does that make sense? So in other words, you bring him in, sit him down, then pay attention, do this and that, get him a drink, you know, something like that, or a snack, or these things, then they'll be quite comfortable with. Right? So if they have a nice place to sit, you deal nicely, there's something to eat or drink, you know, you inquire from them about their welfare and these things and that, and then get down to at some point business, then like that.
Because I had this situation that I met Garland for devotee, and the devotee refuses because they say I'm not qualified. They will just refuse.
The devotee said,
yeah.
You're not.
I made Garland for a devotee.
For you made a Garland for a devotee, and you're not qualified.
No, no, that they are not qualified to have a Garland.
They are not qualified to have a Garland. Why aren't they qualified to have a Garland?
That's what they said. They felt unqualified to accept a Garland.
The devotee said they were unqualified to get a garland.
Yes.
Oh, no, but in that case, then you just offer the garland. They don't want to wear it, that's another thing, but you've done your job. I thought you were talking about non-devotees.
Devotees.
Oh, devotees, then you just follow the, you know, the etiquette, and, you know. The closer they are, the more known, then the less you have to do that. And also, very elaborate things, then generally that's only done if they come very rarely. So like the Argya or the Madhu Parka and like that, that's only done like once a year. If they've come after a year, if they show up a couple of times a week, then you don't do all that.
Maybe they show up.
Yeah. You don't do that. No, you just greet them and this and deal more. Because in other words, somebody from the local village, you don't have the same thing as if they're coming from somewhere else. Because someone from the local village technically is not a guest. They're a friend. A guest means someone from out of town, technically. Does that make sense? So therefore, someone who's a friend or, you know, someone known, you would deal with them more along what you're doing. You know, so you all eat, you know, when you guys eat, when you this and that, you give the kind of the same arrangements you would for yourself. But for the guest, that's when you give, you know, special arrangements. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. Is that okay? Yeah. Okay.
Right. Previously, we used to welcome spiritual masters. I mean, milk and honey. I'm not sure. But the food bathing thing.
Yeah, food bathing.
And what happened now? It's kind of finessed by everybody.
Because it's work. And so if you don't have to work, then it's taken as it's much more practical. We're down to earth. We're professionals. We don't do all that kind of stuff. Sometimes the professionals will stand there for, you know, while they make their suit for them and do all those kinds of stuff. So they do put in a lot of energy to be professional. But us being professional, we don't do what the professionals do, and we don't do what we do. So then we call it professional, but I'm not sure which part of the word that they're working on. No, it'd be a standard thing. I mean, if they don't like it, then that's another thing, but it's still, if the devotees are enthusiastic and the mood is okay, then you do. That would be standard. But if they're not into it, then you don't do it. But I mean, I would do it back at the place. Don't do it at, like, the airport or something like that. You know, so. Okay. Yeah, also it's just something, if they're regularly coming or something like that, that's one thing. If it's more rare, then you make more of a thing out of it. And if it's just, yeah, and same what the relationship is with the person, you know, if it's something that's more, they just come stay at your house, this, that, and that, you may not necessarily do. If it's more of a formal thing or like that, then you tend to do. So it just depends what the relationship's more formal or informal. Okay.
Nanda Maharaj asked Akura,
O descendant of Dasarha, how are all of you maintaining yourselves while the merciless Kamsa remains alive? You are just like sheep under the care of a butcher. That cruel, self-serving Kamsa murdered the infants of his own sister in her presence, even as she cried in anguish. So why should we even ask about the well-being? So why should we even ask about the well-being of you, his subjects? Right. So if he can deal with his sister like that, then we won't even need to ask about the citizens, right? That we know he's not taking care very nicely. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book. After Akura was thus properly received and seated, Nanda Maharaj, the foster father of Krishna, said, "My dear Akura, what shall I inquire from you? Because I know you're living under Kamsa, and that's not. I know that you are being protected by Kamsa, who is most cruel and demoniac. His protection is just like the slaughterhouse keeper's protection of animals he will kill in the future. Kamsa is so selfish that he has killed the sons of his own sister. So how can I honestly believe he is protecting the citizens of Mathura?" This statement is significant. If the political or executive heads of the state are simply interested in themselves, they can never look after the welfare of the citizens. So that's why he's saying, what should I ask from you? Because I can't ask the standard stuff, because we all know that's not going very well. Sukadeva Goswami continued, honored by Nanda Maharaj with these true and pleasing words of inquiry, Akura forgot the fatigue of his journey. You're upset about the mango stuff. Oh, okay. No, yeah, no, I'm just joking. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami continued, honored by Nanda Maharaj with these true and pleasing words of inquiry, Akura forgot the fatigue of his journey. Conclusion. Human society without Krishna consciousness is useless and lifeless. Indeed, the life of anyone whom the supreme personality fails to recognize is simply pitiable. A devotee must know how to render service unto him and thus be recognized by him. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita is therefore explained that one should serve both the spiritual master and Krishna simultaneously, and in that way make progress in Krishna consciousness and be recognized by the Lord. The very goal of life for all embodied beings is this ecstasy, which Akura experienced when, upon receiving Kamsa's order, he put aside all pride, fear, and lamentation, and absorbed himself in seeing, hearing, and describing the things that reminded him of Lord Krishna. He gave up the pride, such as, how can I, Akura, minister of the king, worship by the king, roll in the dust of a cowherd boy? He gave up fear of Kamsa, being angry for rolling in the dust of his enemy. He gave up lamentation concerning the destruction of his wife, children, and house by the angry Kamsa. Footnote 15. Being freed from attachment, fear, and anger, being fully absorbed in me, being freed from attachment, fear, and one is, maintains his anger, not, and anger, being fully absorbed in me and taking refuge in me, Many, many persons in the past became purified by knowledge of me, and thus they all attained transcendental love for me. Bhagavad Gita 4.10. So Krishna is saying here, many, many. So that means it's possible. People can attain this. And we see here attachment, fear, and anger. Because it means attachment is karma. Fear is then impersonalism. But worse than impersonalism is voidism, which is anger. Right? When karma and jnana don't work, because they both can't make you happy. So the natural thing is one should turn to bhakti. But instead, they get angry and reject everything. They go to voidism. So that's considered the worst. So it's the most opposite of bhakti. Right? Because at least in karma and jnana, they're following the process that is the activities, the religion's processes that are used in bhakti. But in voidism, then you're rejecting everything. So bhakti is not there, and the religious process is not there. So it can't. How will it be elevated? This will be a day for leaving. I can't complain sometimes. Okay, chapter 39. Akura's vision. Pratigya, although nothing is unattainable for one who has satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him. And it means whatever is to be gained by a devotee can be gained from the Lord, but the devotee doesn't want anything from the Lord. Right? But still he gains everything, right? Chapter 39 summarizes questions and answers. The numerous rhetorical questions that appear in this chapter are not philosophical in nature, and therefore do not fall under this study. Jaya Prakashika. This 39th chapter describes how the gopis became very disturbed when Krishna departed for Mathura and began to discuss among themselves. Akura, submerging himself in the Jamuna, saw Vaikuntha. Sardarta Darshini 10:39.1. When Krishna and Balaram offered Akura great respect and comfortably seated him on a couch, he felt that all the desires he had reflected on while traveling to Vrindavan were now fulfilled. After the evening meal, Krishna asked Akura whether his trip had been peaceful and whether he was well. The Lord also inquired about how Kamsa was behaving towards their family members, and finally he asked why Akura had come, right? So after all these different things, then only you get down to business, right? Because otherwise if you get right to business, then when will the personal things happen, right? So you deal with all the personal things, the relationships, all those things, they're comfortable, then after that you get down to business, because people generally don't show up unless there's something to do. Right? Or if it's just they came to visit, to see, it's been a long time, then it's done. You've already accomplished. Right? And then you just continue. Akura described how Kamsa had been persecuting the Yadavas. What Narada had told Kamsa and how Kamsa had been treating Vasudeva cruelly. Kura also spoke of Kamsa's desire to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura to kill them on the pretext of their seeing the bow sacrifice and engaging in a wrestling match. Krishna and Balaram laughed out loud when they heard this. They went to their father, Nanda, and informed him of Kamsa's orders. Nanda then issued an order to all the residents of Braja they should collect various offerings for the king and prepare to go to Mathura. The young gopis were extremely upset to hear that Krishna and Balaram would be going to Mathura. They lost all external awareness and began to remember Krishna's pastimes. Condemning the Creator for separating them from him, they began to lament. They said that Akura did not deserve his name. Ah, not Krura, cruel. So Akura means not cruel, so they considered him to be very cruel. Since he was so cruel to be taking away their dearmost Krishna. It must be that fate is against us, they lamented, because otherwise the elders of Braja would have forbidden Krishna to leave. So let us forget our shyness and try to stop Lord Madhava from going. With these words, the young cowherd girls began to chant Krishna's names and cry. But even as they wept, Akura began taking Krishna and Balaram to Mathura in his chariot. The cowherd men of Gokula followed behind on the wagons, and the young gopis also walked behind for some distance. But then they became placated by Krishna's glances and gestures, and pacified by a message from him that said, "I will return." With this in their minds, completely absorbed in Krishna, the cowherd girls stood as still as figures in a painting until they could no longer see the chariot's flag or the dust cloud being raised on the road. Then, chanting Krishna's glories all the while, they despondently returned to their homes. Akura halted the chariot at the bank of the Jamuna so Krishna and Balaram could perform a ritual of purification and drink some water. After the two lords had gotten back into the chariot, Akura took their permission to bathe in the Jamuna. As he recited Vedic mantras, he was startled to see the two lords standing in the water. Akura came out of the water and returned to the chariot, where he saw the lords still sitting. Then he returned to the water to find out if the two figures he had seen were real or not. What Akura saw in the water was four-armed Lord Vasudeva. His complexion was dark blue like a fresh rain cloud. He wore yellow garments, and he lay on the lap of thousand-hooded Anantasesh. Lord Vasudeva was receiving the prayers of perfected beings, celestial servants and demons, and he was encircled by his personal attendants. Serving him were as many potencies such as Shri, Pushti, and Ila, while Brahma and other demigods sang his praises. Akura rejoiced at this vision, and, joining his palms in supplication, began to pray to the Supreme Lord in a voice choked with emotion. Verses 1 to 12. Akura reveals Krishnakamsa's plan. 13 to 37, the distress of the gopis. 38 to 57, Akura's vision. Verses 1 to 12, Akura reveals Kamsa's plan. Sukadeva Goswami said, "Having been honored so much by Lord Balaram and Lord Krishna, Akura, seated comfortably on a couch, felt that all the desires he had contemplated on the road were now fulfilled. My dear King, what is unattainable for one who has satisfied the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the shelter of the Goddess of Fortune? Even so, those who are dedicated to his devotional service never want anything from him." Right, so it means what's not obtainable by them, and at the same time is they don't want anything from him. Footnote 16. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura signs verse 2, Vibhaga Arkamrichi Mala, chapter 15, entitled Analysis of Favorable Conditions for Bhakti, Bhakti Anukulya Vichar, which is in the Abhisthaya section of the Thakura's book. Right, so that always wanting to please Krishna but not looking for anything, any benefit for yourself, then that is then the what is favorable for devotional service. Right? That we turn to Krishna, that's favorable. That we turn to Krishna without looking for any gain for ourselves, then that's the actual favorable. Right? But we turn to Krishna, that will be progressive. So it's auspicious for the advancement. But if you want to get to the position of pure devotion, then we have to give up material desire. Sukadeva Goswami. Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, Akura was warmly received by Lord Krishna and Nanda Maharaj and offered a resting place for the night. In the meantime, the two brothers Balaram and Krishna went to take their supper. Akura sat on his bed and began to reflect that all the desires he had contemplated while coming from Mathura to Vrindavan had been fulfilled. Lord Krishna is the husband of the Goddess of Fortune. Being pleased with his pure devotee, he can offer whatever the devotee desires. But the pure devotee does not ask anything from the Lord for his personal benefit. Sukadeva Goswami continued, after the evening meal, Lord Krishna, the son of Devaki, asked Akura how Kamsa was treating their dear relatives and friends, and what the king was planning to do. Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates, Krishna took his evening meal. Eating twice on Dwadasi is not against the rules for a person who has not taken Upanayanam, sacred thread. After becoming a brahmachari, the rule applies. Right? Because in the Vedic system, then once one takes Upanayana of the Brahmins, like that, they only eat once a day. That's the standard. So eating means the full meal. No specific grains. Milk, fruit, snack, those aren't counted as meals. So then eating that full meal at the other time. So that means here you get the ideas that they have eaten at another time. They've eaten more than get in the evening. So then for them it's not a problem. Right? For eating twice on Dwadasi. Because they're not. So they ate in the morning. Well, then Akura and them, they would have only eaten in the evening. Does that make sense? You know, because he had come all day. There's a good chance if he had come earlier, then maybe he would have eaten earlier. But the point is he came in the evening, so he ate at that time. Well, then for Krishna and Balaram, then it appears that they ate in the morning at their regular time. And again in the evening. Does that make sense? So in Dwadasi, then there's some restriction. Ekadasi, Dasami. So in that full Ekadasi Vrata, it spans over those 3 days. So it's a more major event. After become a Brahmin, okay. Asta Varshadiko Balaha. The rules apply to a child above 8 years, and the rules apply mainly to Brahmanas, since they take Upanayanam when 8 years of age. Right? Because the others may take later. Kshatriya is at 11, Vaishya is at 12, like that. That will be generally your, you know, how you say. Your later consideration. Earlier is better. So Manu is giving that you take Upanayanam, the earlier ages, then that's more beneficial for spiritual development. And if you take later, then that's you know, fine for the cultural development. Because otherwise there won't be enough time to do all the spiritual things if you come later to the Gurukul and leave at the regular time. Right? Yes. Means you have that dual aspect of anybody who's Brahmin initiated then has that capacity to be absorbed in the Lord in those activities. And so then if it's comfortable for them and they are careful about things more like that, then they do. But if not, then they do what works for them, especially if occupationally they're not doing Brahminical activities. Right? But if they're second initiated, involved in the Brahminical occupational duties and like this, then, you know, then it would generally apply. It goes with that full Ekadasi Vrata that we're talking about. So since we're not doing that, then basically speaking on, Dasami, and you eat whatever you want. Ekadasi, you don't eat any grains or beans. And then on Dwadasi, then, you know, you wait until after the sunrise, and then you eat whatever you can get your hands on. Right? Does that make sense? You know, unless there's some. Sometimes you see is that the standard for the breaking of the Ekadasi is after sunrise and before the first quarter of the day. So whenever the sunrise, the sunset, you divide that into four parts. That sets that part. And then whenever the sunrise, that sets the first part. So sometimes then you see in that you sometimes occasionally you don't see it so often that it. That the it'll mention that, you know, breaking the fast is between 8:54 and 9:23 or something. So you wonder why it's just in that. I've even seen shorter. Like that. That's because the Ekadasi Titi is extending through past the sunrise. So until the Ekadasi Titi is over, then one generally avoids. But these are just the general kind of things. But the main thing is Ekadasi, no grains or beans, and Dwadasi, then you break the fast.
Sure,
Prabhupada. Yeah. Right? Because otherwise, so that's why I don't understand why they make up things and when we are. They want to follow rules, they already have rules. So why would they make up their own? That's what was the point before. There's no need. You know, because if they want to eat it, then, I mean. Is it not a common in India that people eat at 10, 11 at night? That's the evening meal? No?
common.
It's common, yes. Mm-hmm. So that's what I'm saying is, why would they then go to bed so that, they can wake up and eat? Why not just go to bed later? Eat later.
Why would they go to sleep? In Mumbai, it is common.
Yeah, I mean, it's the standard time. So I can't even imagine that they'd be asleep before 11:30. It doesn't make sense, you know. You're in Bombay, right? You know, in Bombay, you go by in the morning, like at 8 o'clock in the morning, the sabji wallahs are all asleep. Right? In Calcutta, you know, business started at 5:30, 6 o'clock, you know. So, it's, you know, whatever. So it doesn't make sense. To me, it just seems like an opportunity to eat a lot of mangoes and have some fun or something.
It's actually a new day for this stuff.
Sorry?
It's actually what you said was a new day for this stuff. It's
new devotees.
Understood.
They come up. With, yeah, because it's just they come up with these ideas because they add 2 and 2 and get 57. Okay. He asked how. Yeah, so Brahmins will always do because from 8, then it applies. The others would then start whatever they start from. So traditionally it would be from those kind of things. That would be how it goes. But then Prabhupada doesn't put so much focus on that. Because he gave us our simple program, and then the Varna aspect is simply just what occupations you do to maintain yourself, and it doesn't create any other aspect for us, then it doesn't create. So we're working on the Ekavarna, that everyone has that they're all servants of the Lord, right? They're all engaged in the Pancharatrik system. So there's no need to distinguish socially Brahma, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. But as far as occupation goes, if you don't distinguish, then it means you don't actually have you don't have training that you understand how things actually function. Like that. Because you have to have those who have the brahminical abilities to do brahminical stuff, kshatriya, kshatriya, vaishya, vaishya, shudra, shudra. Otherwise, if you have other people do those things, it won't work. So in the name of being practical, the only thing that's practical is varnashram. But we don't identify like that. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. So you have that aspect. He was asking how Kamsa was treating the Yadus since he was born of Devaki and was dedicated to helping devotees, Bhagavan, or generally wanted to help because they were friends. He asked what else Kamsa was planning at the moment. By asking these questions, he showed Kamsa's fault in causing affliction and showed his affection for his mother and devotees in general. So then all this is he shows what is the weakness in Kamsa, since he's, as a kshatriya, is supposed to protect, and at the same time shows his concern for his family and friends. So then one can, you know, one sees Krishna cares for that, and there are standards by which one should function. Yes? No?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Sama Veta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Premananda.